You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does Texas culture owe to the glory days of the oil boom and to the men who pumped unprecedented wealth out of holes in the ground? The state's economy today is diverse enough that the richest Texan on Forbes' 2007 list was not an energy tycoon, but a tech billionaire, Michael Dell. But for a time in the mid-20th century, oil barons Sid Richardson, Clint Murchison, H.L. Hunt, and Hugh Roy Cullen had so much money and wielded so much power that their designs on changing the social and cultural fabric of both the state and the country seemed well within their grasp. Brian Burra is a special correspondent for Vanity Fair. He writes about the Big Four in his new book, The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. He'll be attending several public events while he's in town, and you can find details of that on the Think page of KERA.org. But we're delighted to welcome him. Brian, welcome.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You write that the Lucas No. 1 oil well at Spindletop essentially changed the entire world forever. Can you tell us about that strike?
Yeah, people don't really, I think, have a good sense of how that first Texas gusher back in 1901, maybe you can understand that it changed Texas because it brought oil production to Texas. But what I think Texans fail to understand is how much Texas oil changed the world. That is, there was so much oil from those first three or four wells, literally more oil than all the rest of America produced at the same time, that all the world's navies, Britain, Germany, America, all were able to move from coal to fuel oil. All the American railroads moved from coal to fuel oil. And so Spindletop, which initiated the age of Texas oil, if you will, also changed the world.
And for a while, oil was cheaper than water.
Oh, yeah. Something like water was 5 cents and oil was three.
3 cents a barrel.
I think that's what it was, yeah.
And before then, the oil regions of the country did not include Texas, what people thought about when they thought about oil country.
Yeah, back at the turn of the century, first off, we didn't have really anything like an oil region because oil was, until Spindletop, not an important commodity. It was mostly used for kerosene. It wasn't used for anything else. And to the extent that there were oil regions, it was western Pennsylvania and a little bit up in Kansas. People thought you were nuts to be looking for oil in Texas.
So they finally did find oil in Texas, but it wasn't at Spindletop really controlled by Texans.
No, I actually start the book off a little bit with just explaining this, that while Spindletop in 1901 initiated oil, kind of the gusher age into Texas, for those first 20 years, most of the production, almost all the infrastructure down there was controlled by Eastern companies. Texaco, Gulf, Sun, a number of these large companies are actually created, were born at Spindletop. It really was not until the 1920s that individual Texas oilmen, wildcatters, really got into the game in earnest.
So let's talk about some of these guys. We can start with Clint Murchison. He essentially got rich ignoring the Texas Railroad Commission.
Well, Clint Murchison was so diversified so early, and I mean diversified within oil. He made money in just about every angle of oil and gas you can do it in the 20s and 30s. Yeah, one of his most controversial, I think to him, proud components of his personality was that during the Depression, when there were sharp limits on how much oil could be drilled in the East Texas field, Mr. Murchison drilled all the oil he wanted, and that was called hot oil. It was technically illegal. An awful lot of people thought Mr. Murchison was a hero. An awful lot thought that he was, let's just say, less than a hero. But there's no denying it made him a lot of money.
And what were the limits for? Was it limiting production so that there would not be a glut on the market?
That was part of it. But actually, the main reason that you limited oil production was you didn't want to damage the underground field. The East Texas field was so big, people were taking oil out so fast. Because remember, the rule of capture in oil is first one that takes it out of the ground gets to keep it. The problem is if you take it out too fast, it can damage the underground pressure. So the state put some controls in place.
He was an interesting guy in terms of personal style. You call him, forget Mark Cuban, he was the first casual billionaire.
He really was. And that kind of dawned on me that, you know, 50 years before Bill Gates made it okay to take your jacket off, and back in the 40s and 30s when millionaires were seen as kind of monopoly men in Fifth Avenue mansions, Clint Murchison came into his place on 12, you know, on Main Street, in shirt sleeves. The only tie he wore, he used as a belt. if nobody was coming in, he'd wear shorts and flip flops to the office. And this was a man who was one of the wealthiest men in the country at the time. He obviously brilliant guy. A real founder of the Dallas business structure.
And he grew up in Athens, not too far from Sid Richardson.
They were Sid Richardson and Clint Merkerson were childhood buddies. They picked peaches together. They traded cattle together. They did all sorts of things together. And in the early 1920s, they went out to the North Texas oil fields to start making money together.
I'm amazed to hear that Sid Richardson was thought of as kind of a lazy kid.
I was, too. Sid Richardson is the oilman of my big four that probably the fewest people know. Because he died back in 59. This was a fellow who made his money late in life. Late in his life. And I guess part of it was he was never exactly a go-getter. But there during the Depression, he got enough.
And as you mentioned earlier, he intended to make his life and his fortune in cattle trading.
Yeah, both Merkerson and Richardson really just wanted to be cattle traders. They thought that was far more glamorous than oil because they didn't really have a sense of the oil business other than the fact that an awful lot of young men out there were making money in it. Let's go see if we can make some, too. They were just smart enough and had just enough energy that, by the mid-30s, they were awful, awful rich.
What made him so sort of intensely private, if not secretive?
Richardson?
Yeah.
Good question. I kind of wondered a little bit about that myself. Sid Richardson never had a family. He never married. His principal residence was on St. Joe's Island off the coast down in the Gulf. And he always told people, don't put anything in writing, put it all on the phone. That way they can't hold it against you. I don't know why the man was so secretive. I've known some very successful business people who were just that way. Nice fella, but didn't want to talk too much about his business.
Any chance he was gay before that was socially acceptable?
Well, close old friends insist that was a rumor of the day, but that's not true, that in fact Sid would much rather fly ladies of the evening into the house on the island or to Fort Worth or where he was because, you could get them in and get them out by dawn and go out and hunt. You didn't have to worry.
I know that he had a couple of sort of reversals of fortune throughout his career, and there's a certain family mythology associated with that last spurt of money that finally allowed him to become who he became. Some say that his brother-in-law, or his sister, I guess, gave him $40.
Yeah, Sid Richardson was a penniless during the Depression. He made a couple of small fortunes and lost them. And then I'm trying to remember my years here. I think it was about 34. He showed up in New Orleans where his sister was vacationing and said, Annie, honey, I need $40. Some family people have told me it's more like $400 just to get me back on the train out to West Texas where I know people. One last chance. Please just give me one last chance. And son of a gun, he went out there in 1935. He hit the Keystone Field. Out in Winkler County, out on the New Mexico border, and during World War II, they found a humongous amount of oil below that. And by the time of his death in 1959, it was said he controlled more oil reserves than three of the major oil companies.
And he was not a guy who forgot people who had been kind to him. Oh. I think my favorite story in the book is about he set up an office for a while at a soda fountain.
I thought this was apocryphal when I first heard it. And keep in mind, Sid Richardson is a fellow about which there's never been a biography. He cooperated with exactly one magazine article in his life. Mark Cuban cooperates with that many in a morning. and there is this great story that ultimately I believe that proved it was not apocryphal. During the Depression, when Richardson didn't have any money, he was evicted from his office, and he was forced to take up to work the phone in a local drugstore downtown. And when he was gone, the druggist, a fellow named Jack Collier, would take the calls and answer at Sid Richardson's office. So in 1936, after Richardson hit it big, he came back to the drugstore, sat down, and said, Jack, if there's anything in the world you could have today, what would you want? And Jack said, well, I'd like to own this store. And Mr. Richardson handed him some papers and said, you do. I bought it for you.
Yeah, it's just great. And he hung on to it even after Collier died.
He actually bought him another one later, and it was among the assets disposed of in his will.
Brian Burra is my guest. We're talking about his book, The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. H.L. Hunt is a fascinating character, no matter what aspect of his life that you consider. His big money, though, came when he started partnering with a guy known for buying up mineral rights from recent widows.
Well, you know, this is one of the, for those of you who care about this type of thing for Texas history, this is one of the most famous stories of modern history, how this broken down old wildcatter named Dad Joyner, Columbus Marion Joyner, who was kind of an oil man, but he was really kind of a con man. He went around buying up, for very little money, oil rights from elderly widows, many of them recently widowed. In fact, he would find their names in the obituaries in the Dallas paper, drive out to East Texas, get their mineral rights, and by the late 20s, you know, he had enough of these things, and he'd raised enough money from people that people were kind of getting on him to go drill. You know, you're going to actually drill that well you keep telling us about? Anyway, very long story short, he did. And on the day he was about to strike oil-bearing sands, who should drive up but this little-known Arkansas oilman, until recently a professional gambler, professional card player, who had heard that Dad Joyner had a promising well. And this fellow who drove up, his name was H.L. Hunt. And that's where the history began.
We are talking to Brian Burrow right now. We'll be back to our discussion with him in just a minute. The book is called The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. Brian is in town for multiple events in North Texas, and you can find out about those on the Think page of KERA.org. Right now, we would ask that you call us at 1-800-456-5372 and become the next new or renewing member of KERA. We would love to be able to thank you with a copy of Brian's book that is available as a gift when you make a contribution of $120 or more. Lots of easy ways to do that. You can do it online, or you can also do it on the phones. Again, that number is 1-800-456-KERA, 1-800-456-5372. Jeff Whittington is with us now. He is the senior producer of Think, and he's also the host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And Jeff, this is the kind of book, there are some that I already know that certain members of the staff will say, hey, when you're done with that book, can I have it? And this one strikes me as one that if you haven't already been through it cover to cover, this is one that you're going to want.
It's very interesting. And I think that it's very interesting to many of you. And that's why we, that's why we asked Mr. Burrow to be our guest today, because we thought that, you know, he's in town. It's an interesting topic, and really, it has nothing to do with whether we're in the fundraising campaign or not. But we are really thrilled to make his book available to you as a thank you gift today when you join at the $120 membership level. You know, we all make decisions on where we spend our money. We all want to get the greatest value for our dollars. Why not consider a $100 or $120 or $200 contribution to KERA? Because you can, you know, help the station provide the service that you already use, and also help us wrap this membership campaign up that much faster.
KERA is looking to raise an additional $123,500, and then we will quit. We will stop. We will leave you alone until the next time that we need to raise funds. That is months from now. So give us a call right now if you haven't done so far. Some of you, no matter what we say, like to wait until sort of the last day. We're all hoping that we're in the last day or two here. And the sooner we hear from you, the sooner we'll be able to pick back up and have full-time programming without these interruptions. So give us a buzz right now and support the station at 1-800-456-5372.
Online pledges as well at KERA.org are always welcome. It's a safe, secure way. It's just as convenient. Maybe it's more convenient for you than to get on the phone if you're already on the computer. You can just surf over to KERA.org, click on the support banner, and make your contribution. When you go online, you can see, you'll see the book that's available. Brian Burrow, the new book, The Big Rich. Sorry, it's been a long day, Chris. And you can click on that. You can select that when you join the station at the $120 membership level.
This is absolutely one of those books that everybody's reading right now. I was at the airport the other day, Jeff, and the airport port bookstore, you know, the window is always filled with one really hot topic book, and this was the one. There were 50 copies there. We would love for you to have your copy through KERA when you make a contribution of $120 or more. So give us a call now at 1-800-456-5372. You can also do this online at KERA.org. You can pay with a credit card. You can set up a sustaining membership.
It is up to you. It's your choice. You've already chosen to listen to the station, so why not support it? Of course, you can go get this book at the bookstore. It's out right now, but we'd love for you to support KERA at the same time. So please call 800-456-5372. Please go online to KERA.org and make your pledge now. Thanks.
Thanks. You You are listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Brian Burra. His new book is called The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or emailing think@kera.org. If you are ready now to support KERA with a contribution of $120 or more, one of the thank you gifts we have available is a copy of The Big Rich, and you can find out about that at 1-800-456-5372. Or by going online to kera.org. So we started earlier, Brian, talking about H.L. Hunt. Not a philanthropist in his day, but he did reach out from his own pocket after a horrific accident in Russ County.
Yeah, this is, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do the book is these men as a class, the wealthy Texas oilmen, and especially H.L. Hunt, had been so thoroughly caricatured by Northern and Eastern writers. I'm not saying they're perfect men, but there was a rounder, more complete, I think more nuanced story to be told. And, you know, one of the incident you're referring to was clearly one of the bright spots in his life when they had the great natural gas explosion at the New London School in East Texas in 1937, which I believe is still the largest ever death, a number of deaths at an American school. It's like 200 kids. And Hunt was it was actually one of Hunt's pipelines that had blown up, but it wasn't his fault. One of the janitors at the school had illegally tapped into it. And Hunt was everywhere, giving money to the parents, putting, you know, loading bodies. I mean, it was one of those kind of moments for which an awful lot of people always remembered him for.
He was certainly a guy, this is a horrible segue, but he did love children, and told his wife at one point, his first family wife, that he had such good genes that he really felt like he should get as many of them out there as possible, and that he did.
Well, there was one of the things about Hunt is that it's very clear from an early age, you know, he was clearly a pampered kid, apple of his parents' eyes, and he clearly had a massive ego, a sense that he was had superhuman abilities. And, you know, in some way, he's exactly right.
It's hard to argue that.
I mean, but like a lot of wealthy men, I think he was brilliant in one phase of life, in this case, business and oil. And too often, many of the billionaires and millionaires I've come to know over the years is they make the mistake of believing that they're brilliant in all areas of life. And I think that was sometimes the case with Mr. Hunt.
He had his first wife, and he had a second wife simultaneously?
That's right. They people always argued about whether she was absolutely, totally 112% his wife, but yeah, she was. He had two families simultaneously between about 1925 and the 1940 time frame, when the secret wife, having no longer unfortunately been secret, was bought out, at which point you would a thinking person would think, well, Mr. Hunt's going to go back to the straight and narrow, but no.
Third time's a charm.
Took up with another young lady, a wonderful woman named Ruth Wright, a quiet religious woman. They had another family in secret. When the first wife died, Mr. Hunt ultimately married her. He became his last wife and adopted all their children. He actually did the right thing.
And always took care of all the children from all the relationships.
Certainly took care of them financially.
I think
for those of us who actually delve into such things, you know, I mean, he clearly had his favorites among his children, those that he spent time on, those that he didn't.
Mm-hmm. And this is amazing to me that back in that day, oil money was considered very gauche, and he couldn't find his way with his millions of dollars into the Brook Hollow Country Club.
Well, initially, you're right. It's funny. Dallas was less accepting of nouveau riche oilmen than Houston was originally. I have my own theories about why that is. But, yeah, he couldn't get into the country club in 41, and a number of oilmen early on couldn't. And Hunt didn't make it easy on himself because he had such a life secret. That he, as a result, shunned all publicity and all philanthropy for many, many years in Dallas. And that contributed to kind of his outsider status, if you will, here in town.
Brian Burra is my guest. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. His book is called The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. Let's get to the phones now and speak to Tom in Arlington. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but I had an opportunity to meet some of the Hunt heirs socially back in the 1980s. I was wondering if in your research, did you ever find any evidence of the Hunt family helping to fund covert operations like those depicted in movies like Charlie Wilson's War? That Texas socialite Joanne Herring played by Julia Roberts. The function she held remarkably like the ones where some of the Hunt daughters and sons were supposedly solicited to help fund special operations for the CIA and also people like Ollie North. Did you ever come across anything like that studying the Hunt family?
Yeah, that is not a nutty question. While this is not something I dwell upon in the book, I may actually do away with it in one or two sentences. As I recall, H.L. Hunt's perhaps most famous son, Bunker Hunt, was, I believe, approached by Oliver Hunt back in the day to give money to the Contras and that
Oliver
type
North.
Of thing. Excuse me, what did I say?
Oliver Hunt.
Oh, goodness.
Oliver North,
of course. So, yeah.
It's not another Hunt child that we haven't heard of.
So that type of thing is not at all outlandish, and nothing at all wrong with it either.
And Bunker Hunt paid for the famous ad that John F. Kennedy saw on essentially the morning that he died that said, "Welcome to Dallas, Mr. President."
That's right. I don't believe he was the sole contributor. I believe he was one of several. When JFK showed up in Dallas that morning, there was the black-rimmed ad attacking him for essentially being a communist. It's an unfortunate timing, let's say.
And, after a while, they all started sort of getting political.
Well, it's a funny thing. All these fellows that I write about, my big four oilmen, all made their money in a single five-year window during the Great Depression, 1930-1935. Simple reason that they did this because all the majors quit essentially exploring. So individual wildcatters were able to get an awful lot of oil, and that's what happened with these fellows. But no one, even in Texas, I think, really had a sense of how wealthy these men had become until April 1948 when Life magazine ran this famous picture of H.L. Hunt with the headline, "Is this the wealthiest man in the United States?" And you have to understand, people not only didn't think H.L. Hunt was that wealthy, outside Texas, nobody even knew he existed. And suddenly, within a year, you have these four oilmen, Hunt, Merkson, Richardson, Roy Cullen, being acknowledged as the four of, if not the four, wealthiest men in the country. So what do wealthy people in America do when they suddenly get wealthy? Well, generally they go to Hollywood, and often they get involved in politics. That's what happened here. This was obviously a time of great intellectual and political ferment, the late 40s and early 50s. It's now viewed as kind of the birth of a modern American conservatism. And all four of these big oilmen, especially Mr. Hunt, were very, very active in the early seeding and spreading of American post-war conservative thought.
Yeah, and initially they were sending money LBJ's way, but were very disappointed with how he turned out.
That's right. Especially Merkson and Richardson were among LBJ's biggest backers into the 40s. But Merkson didn't particularly care. He was conservative, but he just thought, you know, he's playing it both ways. Johnson could get him in the doors he needed to be. But, all through the 50s, Mr. Hunt, and to a lesser extent, Mr. Merkson and Mr. Cullen, were incredibly active, printing things, sponsoring radio shows that were all consistently not just conservative, but I think most people started to call them ultra-conservative, very anti-communist, pro-religion. Roy Cullen down in Houston was actually the single largest individual giver to American political campaigns in 1952 and 1954. So Texas oilmen were kind of late to be acknowledged by the rest of the country. But once they got on the stage, they were loud and they made themselves heard.
Do you see a Rupert Murdoch parallel?
Well, Mr. Hunt attempted to become an early Murdoch. Roy Cullen actually attempted to buy a radio network and turn it into an early Fox News. Neither man was successful in the long run because they were not very good, frankly, at building bridges to other conservatives. They had become so powerful in part because they kept control and they ran the business. Well, in politics, you need to build those bridges. And these gentlemen, I think, were primarily concerned with guarding them.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line is Terry in Dallas. Hello, Terry.
Hello. Yes, I have a couple of stories, but one I need to verify, and it's about Sid Richardson. The first one is he had donated land in Fort Worth for the state school, land always been owned by the family, and when he passed away, for some reason, I don't know, the land was given up and the state school closed. The other story is my family, maybe there are others like this. I had an uncle who, great uncle, a lot of land in West Texas. They wanted to drill for oil. He put them off. My grandfather said, better do it. Put them off. He said, they'll drill under you and get, as a matter of fact, they did slant to Wales and got his oil. But really more interested in the Sid Richardson story in the state school.
Well, I can claim to know, I say this with great pride, as many stories about Sid Richardson as any person my age in America at this moment. And that's a story I have not heard. I'm not saying it's not true, just haven't heard it.
And because Richardson, he was not particularly philanthropic during his lifetime, but he had no children and he gave the money to his nephews.
When Sid Richardson died, he was easily, I think, one of the top 10 wealthiest people in the country. Some would say the wealthiest. I doubt that. He created a foundation that put 75% of everything he had in the foundation. He gave the rest of it to his nephew, and who had been his working partner, Perry Bass, and Perry's four sons. And, of course, you cannot walk onto a college campus these days without running into some Sid Richardson Hall or some something.
I went to TCU.
There mm-hmm. you go. They're at Rice. They're at Baylor. Good Lord, they're everywhere except Temple Junior College, where many of my friends went. In any case, Sid Richardson got a lot of guff during his days for not being philanthropic, but he more than made up for it after his death.
We'll talk about Roy Cullen a little bit after this break, too. So we'll find out some more about philanthropy of these Texas oil men. Brian Burra is my guest. His new book is called The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. We would welcome you to join the conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. You are also welcome to join KERA now and at any time. But if you call us now at 1-800-456-5372 and you're ready to make a contribution of at least $120, we would love for you, if you're interested, to select a copy of Brian's book, The Big Rich, as your thank you. Of course, you don't have to take a thank you gift, but we know, you know, if you already want to get a copy of the book and you already want to support KERA, we know we're not selling you that book, but we would love to put those two things together for you. Again, the number is 1-800-456-5372.
Of course. Hey, Chris. And of course, Mr. Burrow has a ton of almost half a dozen events in the next 2 days, four to be exact, that so far that have been booked. And you can pick up these books there. So if you want to support KERA right now at 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org, that'd be great. You can go to Morton Steakhouse this evening. You can go to Legacy Books this evening. The Fort Worth Petroleum Club tomorrow at 11:30. Barnes & Noble in Fort Worth tomorrow at 7 p.m. All that information is on our website. And if you're on kera.org/think, checking this out, why not click over to the support page and make a contribution while you're there?
It takes a very short time to become a member of the station. And, you know, if you set up what we call a sustaining membership, it really feels like it takes almost nothing out of your budget because it's a monthly transfer from your checking account to KERA's account. You know, if you think about it, even $50 or $100 a month is not so much, but it's a really substantial contribution. If you can do $125 a month, that makes you a friend of KERA, which puts you in a special category, and there are a lot of special benefits that come along with that, including multiple events every year with really top-notch, a lot of public broadcasting personalities who come to visit the station. You meet them in person, and there's little receptions. It's a great thing, a great way to thank those of you who are able to help us at the $1,500 level or more.
The volunteers have all the details at 800-456-5372. You can read about it online at kera.org, but please go to one of those places right now, either the telephone at 800-456-KERA or the website, and make your gift of support. You know, I was saying to Jeff Ramirez this morning, Chris, you know, it's not, we don't just decide, hey, it'd be fun to have a membership campaign. Let's just take let's take some breaks.
And, I heard that this
and
morning.
Let's do some fun membership
and
fundraising.
I was blow drying my hair. It was 6 something in the morning, and I thought fun, as Jeff said, is really not exactly the word we think of.
Well, you know what? It's necessary, and we try to make the best of it we possibly can. But really, we have to be on the air to ask you to support the station until we reach the goal. The goal is $500,000. We're getting closer and closer to just $100,000 left to raise. For those of you who like to be in the last final push, we're getting there. We're in the last maybe day or day and a half of the drive right now. So we'd really love to hear from you at 800-456-5372. Your pledge right now would help us get there that much quicker.
I want to thank all of you who are current members. I have to say I am really delighted, and I think everybody here is delighted, and we hope that you are as well, by how many people have responded to the idea that as soon as we finish fundraising the amount that we need, we will end the drive. They do feel like they're getting shorter and shorter, which is nice. That's a great way for you to tell Jeff Ramirez, our program director, yes, keep it this way so that as soon as the money is raised, we can move back to regular programming. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. And of course, to support the station, it's just kera.org. You can click on that big support button. Public radio exists because people like you believe it's important and listen to it. But the listening wouldn't be enough. Without some dollars to run the station, we wouldn't be here. We're here thanks to you.
And your contribution goes to support what you hear every single day on the station. Top-notch journalists, engaging conversations, programs that stimulate your mind. But the things you can't hear, those have costs as well. The transmitter, the broadcasting equipment, stuff has to get fixed. We have to pay for the news wires. And, you know, of course, we have to have staff to make the operation work. We're asking you to help offset those costs right now at 800-456-5372. Use your credit card or your debit card, and your contribution will go to work right away. It cuts down on paperwork and thus cost associated with even just receiving and getting your contribution and putting it to work. So if you could just take a moment right now and call 800-456-KERA or go online to kera.org with your credit card or your debit card, just get it taken care of, and the drive will almost be over, although it'll be over for you.
That's right. Yeah, once you've done your part, you are free and clear, and you're able to just sit back and relax and enjoy yourself knowing that you've helped to support the station. If it turns out that you do enjoy paperwork, we can set it up that way. So if you really want something to fill out, we can certainly make that happen for you as well. But give us a call right now, 1-800-456-5372. I say with a great deal of pride that we have some of the best volunteers in North Texas. There are a whole host of them in the other room. They've had lunch. They are ready to go and take your call and efficiently process your membership.
Chris, we've heard from over 4,000 people so far this drive from all over North Texas, a few people from elsewhere in the country and elsewhere in the world who've even supported KERA, but we're still waiting to hear from you at 800-456-5372. We're still waiting for your online pledge at kera.org. Just $122,000 left to raise. Chris, we can get there within a day, but we do need to hear from those of you who are still waiting.
Your part of this is only your $100 or $200 or your $1,500 or whatever amount that you can give. But we do ask that you give it now by calling 1-800-456-5372. Thanks. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Brian Burra. His new book is called The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. Brian has a handful of appearances in North Texas the next couple of days. You can find out about all of them on the Think page of KERA.org. If you would like to receive a copy of Brian's book and also support KERA, you can find out the details by calling 1-800-456-5372. On the other hand, you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372, or we will read your email that goes to think@kera.org. So of the big four, Hugh Roy Cullen was the one who gave a substantial amount of his money away while he was still alive. Yeah. How did he choose his causes?
He liked Texas causes. Mm-hmm. Originally, I think like a lot of us, in fact, you can even see this today with y'all's pledge drive, we don't necessarily think about the good we can do until somebody comes to us. That's what happened with him. And Houston City Fathers were trying to start a university. They called it the University of Houston, and it was basically a mobile home and a couple of guys named Fred. And they, in 1936, they went to Mr. Cullen. They said, hey, we heard you did okay in the oil fields. Could you give us a little bit of money? And he gave him a university. He gave him, the first three buildings, the first a private broadcasting station, a university in the country. Later, as he became older in 1948, he wanted to give some more money. His wife said, Roy, how about the hospitals? So to the extent that we all identify the Texas Medical Center as really one of the great centers of medical knowledge in not only in Texas, but the country and the world, It was Hugh Roy Cullen who started it in a way. He started one day. In 1948, the hospitals in Houston were falling apart. He called every single fundraiser, every single president in, and gave him a check for $1 million plus, which back then was a heck of a lot of money. When the Episcopalians and a couple of the other faiths realized that they didn't yet have a hospital, they raised their hand. He gave them a few more million. Ultimately, he got so busy in philanthropy that he decided to create a foundation, the Cullen Foundation, in 1948, that he put so much oil money into it. I think it was something by, in today's dollars, $1.6 billion. At that time, it was the largest single charitable donation ever by an American, and the Cullen Foundation became the third largest foundation in America.
And they're still alive and well today.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Mm-hmm. What impact did that philanthropy have on other wealthy Texans?
Oh, I don't think too much. You can't look at Sid and Clint, Mr. Hunt, and say they suddenly went and dived into giving away money. They did their share. But back in those days, all the big four oilmen, and I think a lot of other oilmen like Glenn McCarthy down in Houston, were just becoming accustomed to being public figures. They were really the Warren Buffetts and Bill Gateses of their day in terms of wealth and celebrity. And they were all trying to figure out what they wanted to do with that. Mr. Cullen was the one who chose philanthropy and politics, but each of them took their own routes.
And there was a second generation for all of these guys, and there were varying degrees of success in sort of carrying on the family name and the family cause.
The mantle of the big rich, the Texas big rich, by the late 50s, it started to pass to the second generation. Mr. Merkson had a series of strokes and passed in the 60s. Sid Richardson, Roy Cullen both passed in the late 50s. And by 1960, really, the big rich was the two Merkson young men, Clint Jr. and John, and the three most prominent of the Hunt sons, Bunker, Herbert, and Lamar. And each, you know, I mean, yesterday we just had the Super Bowl, which was named by Lamar Hunt. It's too bad the Cowboys weren't in it, who, of course, we all know were the originally founding owners were the Merksons. So they made, between 1960 and the narrative of the book really ends kind of in the mid-80s, they made their marks. They made their marks on our country in as many ways as their father. Not all these marks were entirely positive. A lot of money was lost as well, but I tell you, they're good stories. I was telling my son this, that if you live in Texas, if you grow up in Texas, whether you buy the book or not, these are stories that you should know.
What do you think, what kind of impact did these guys have on the way we as Texans see our own culture?
Not only the way we see it, but the way the world sees it. If you've ever traveled in Europe and you mention that you're from Houston or Dallas, just the sheer volume of cultural cliches that come flying at you, all that I trace to these four men. You cannot have an understanding of the great seismic shift in the way Texas was viewed beginning about 1948, 1958, when the rest of the world realized how much wealth was here. Up to then, Texas had been known for cattle, cowboys, people shooting each other, and braggadocio. Suddenly, though, there were millionaires and billionaires to go along with all that. So to the extent that Texas is viewed today as, in its worst caricature, one big issue, one big episode of Dallas, the reality of that, the myth generation process, all started with these fellas. They really created the image of the modern Texas. Did they create the way we as Texans think of ourselves? I'm not sure I can go that far, but I do feel safe making the argument that they created the image that is most popular with people elsewhere.
Is it fair to say that since the late 80s, we've been working incredibly hard in Texas to shake off that image?
I think that image, well, actually, the reality and the finances of it, an awful lot of it fell apart in the 80s. Excuse me. Oil prices just went to heck in a handbasket, and a number of individuals in these families, as well as the individuals across Texas, went bankrupt. And I actually attempt to make the argument. Look, I took Texas history in the seventh grade, just like everybody. And I'm trying to add to that by saying that the era of the big rich is 1920 to about 1986. After that, oil is not what it used to be, and Texas needs to reinvent itself, and son of a gun, it's done a pretty darn good job. Pittsburgh's not what it used to be without the steel industry, but it's something good. And Texas, what with Michael Dell and education and technology, I'm ashamed to say I haven't actually lived here since 1986, but my parents are still down in Temple. I come back all the time. And I'm amazed at the changes all the time, how Texas has so successfully diversified away from oil while keeping some of its best components intact.
Well, it's really interesting, and you make the point in the book that the real money in energy now in Texas is in refining rather than drilling.
Refining and knowledge. You talk to Bill White, the mayor down in Houston. He'll say there is no significant oil production within 40 miles of City Hall. But what makes Houston, and you can say in some cases the same thing about Dallas, although I think Dallas has done a better job of diversification. What makes them special still is the oil expertise that is here and the high-tech knowledge that Texans, so many of us, not all of us, but so many of us have soaked up through generations of oilmen. If you go anywhere in the world, North Sea, Nigeria, Indonesia, where there's oil production, you're going to run into smart, educated Texans who are helping run things.
Let's take a quick call from Lori in Denton. Hey, Lori.
Good afternoon. The reason why I'm calling is that when I was a little girl, my grandmother told me the story about the New London School explosion and told me about the reason why natural gas has a smell was because of that, because it was odorless before that. And I was wondering why you don't hear more about it. I know it was a terrible tragedy, but there are a lot of people, and especially people here in Texas, that have no knowledge about the 1937 explosion. And it was such a significant event in Texas history. I've just wondered why it's not talked about more. Is it just because there's so many people that still remember it, or what?
I'd say exactly the opposite. How many things do most of the people who live in your neighborhood or your complex know actually happened in 1937? The Hindenburg blew up. FDR tried to pack the Supreme Court. Those things aren't talked about very much except by academics. Who really wants to talk about an awful story of 260-some-odd school children, elementary school children, who died in an awful accident?
You write in the book that you think the Big Four would probably hate living in America today. Why is that?
Well, I make the argument in the book that politically, these gentlemen during the 50s, when they were really roaring onto the scene, were out of step with a post-war America that was getting it was getting comfortable with civil rights, with the New Deal, with all the changes around the post-war period. I don't think that they would much care for the way America has changed over the last 50 years, whether it's popular music or popular politics. I think their hearts would have been warmed by having a genuine conservative in the White House the last 8 years. Happened to be a Texas oil man himself. One of three presidents, you could say, Texas oil money did an awful lot to get in office. But while I'm not sure what they would think of America today, I think given their politics, America probably wouldn't be crazy about them.
Brian Burra is a special correspondent for Vanity Fair. His new book is called The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. You can get details on Brian's multiple North Texas appearances at the think page of KERA.org. Brian, so much interesting stuff. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to all of you who have been calling this hour to join the conversation and to join the station. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number to do that. You can also go to KERA.org and become a member online. It is quick and easy to do. It means an awful lot to us because we take your money and turn it right back into the programming that you're listening to right now, that you listen to from the network services that we subscribe to. Your dollars keep KERA humming. Jeff Whittington keeps Think humming. He is the senior producer of the show. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Over half the annual funding needed to make this radio station work comes directly from you. It's listener-supported public radio. We take your dollars and we put them right to work, making all the programs possible. We've heard from 4,000 of you, a little over 4,000 of you, this drive during the whole membership campaign so far, but we're still waiting to hear from a few of you, and you know who you are. If you've been thinking about joining the station, please do it right now. We are getting really close to the last, the last fifth of money that's needed to be raised in this campaign, and we really, really, really could use your support right now at 800-456-5372. You can support KERA, your public radio station, at kera.org.
You do not need a vast oil fortune to support the station, although if you have one, we'd be happy to chat with you for a while. Whatever amount works for you is the amount that is right for you to give to us. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. We have heard from over 4,000 people in this drive from all over North Texas, but we do still have over $100,000 to raise. So please don't think, great, those 4,000 people have taken care of KERA and I don't need to worry about it. We do need your call as much as ever at 1-800-456-5372. You can give $240 or $400 or $1,000 or $60, whatever amount really makes sense to you. It all counts toward this programming.
It all counts toward the goal. It all counts toward getting the drive over with and getting back to the regular schedule as quickly as possible. The minute that last dollar is contributed, the membership campaign will cease and we'll get right back to the regular schedule. You can help make that happen with a call right now to 800-456-KERA or an online pledge at kera.org. If you're wondering, the thank you gifts from the People's Pharmacy Special, which reran yesterday and Saturday morning and has been very popular, they're all still available. You can get, the new book, Favorite Home Remedies, plus there are five new guides from Joe and Terry Graydon available when you join the station at the $100 membership level. You can call 800-456-5372, speak to a KERA volunteer, make your KERA contribution, and you will say thanks with the People's Pharmacy stuff.
You may have decided after hearing today's interview that you definitely want to read Brian Burrow's new book, The Big Rich, The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Texas Oil Fortunes. As always, Jeff and I would encourage you to run to the nearest bookstore if it's something that you want to read. It is a great read. If, however, you would also, you're ready to support KERA and you want to make a $120 contribution, you can choose the book with our compliments. That's your thank you for joining today. Please give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 or go to kera.org. Thanks to everyone who has already made that call or gone online and clicked through and become a member that way. Thanks also to all of you who are members all the time through sustaining memberships. Please don't ever think that we have forgotten you because you are very, very important.
1-800-456-KERA, online at kera.org. We talked about it during the earlier break, but Brian Burrow has several appearances over the next 2 days in North Texas. They're all on the Think page at kera.org/think. You can see all those locations. Most of them are, I think they're all free. And this is really exciting for me because when I'm trying to put together guests that are coming through, I always love to be able to tell you about where they're going to be so you can go and meet them and see them speak. And of course, you can pick up a copy of his book at any one of these four appearances. He said he's speaking. He told me, Chris, when we were walking up from the lobby, he's speaking to more groups in Dallas than he spoke to in New York. It makes sense because this is Texas oil country. But this is an author who obviously has done the homework, done the research. He's written the book. A lot of people are interested in this this book. And, we're really excited to bring him here today to you. If you appreciate that conversation, if you appreciate the fact that we bring authors and guests and experts in when we can and get them on the phone when we can't get them in the studio to bring you topics that make you think about things, then support it at 800-456-5372. Support KERA right now at kera.org.
I have to agree with what Brian said, Jeff, which is that even if you took Texas history in seventh grade, like so many of us did, this is an element of Texas history that may not be fully covered. And it's good if you're a resident of the state, you need to sort of know our history. So give us a call now. And if you want that as a thank you gift, the amount is $120. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. We are counting down in our winter membership campaign. The overall goal was $500,000, Jeff.
It is, and we're getting close to just about $120,000 left to raise. When you call, when you join online, you're supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. Also, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman. And, of course, online all the time at kera.org. You can make your support pledge there. Call 800-456-5372 if you want to talk to one of the volunteers. And, Chris, about the $120 membership level has been one of the most popular pledge levels during this membership campaign.
We are aware that you have your own level of membership. It may be $120 for you. Maybe you're at a place in your life where you can do more than that. Maybe you can do a dollar a day, which is day sponsorship. This is a terrific thing because you get to choose a particular day of the year, and if no one else has already claimed that day, you get three short little recorded non-commercial messages. And so people say happy anniversary or happy birthday, or they have other little messages. A great way to have a sort of intangible thank you from KERA, but also support the station. If you're interested in this, give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org.
It is the a membership pledge of $365 on a credit card, and you can pick the day provided it hasn't already been selected. It's a great way to, you know, to say thanks maybe to someone who introduced you to KERA or wish your folks happy anniversary or something like that. Volunteers have all the details, but you got to call to find out more. 800-456-5372, online at kera.org.
You are the heart and soul of public radio. You are also the financial backbone of public radio. So give us a call now, please, at 1-800-456-5372 or go to kera.org online. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.